It's been a long time coming. But tonight, because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America. It's been a long time.
In just a few weeks, the man who coined the phrase, change we can believe in, will be inaugurated as our 44th president. Barack Obama promises a change in American issues, politics, education, international affairs, war, poverty, health care. But we all know change must come from within.
The reason we began this improbable journey almost a year ago is because it's not just about what I will do as president. It is also about what you, the people who love this country, the citizens of the United States of America, can do to change it.
This week we hear from 826 NYC producer Lewis, a young man who has struggled with his past and his personal desire to change.
It's me and him, and then behind them, and then behind them is his boys, and then next to his boys is you. So all of y'all ready to do something because all of y'all had your hands in your pocket. So I know most of y'all must have something on y'all.
You're mentioning like I was against you, dude.
Nah. You was with me. No, you know what happened? While dude was talking to me, I was thinking, yo, if I pull out my knife, the Sylvia have my back? yo, if I get him and he gets me, will Silvio have my back? Yo, I was dead ass thinking that.
Thanks for questioning my loyalty.
Nah. It's cause I was thinking like if I lose, what's gonna happen?
Cause I'm Lewis, 18 years old, raised in the Bronx, and this is me and my boy Silvio having a talk. You see, I spent my 4 years of high school stealing and selling drugs, mostly mugging other kids and people in nearby neighborhoods. I never got caught. In the beginning of my senior year, I decided to stop, to change my life, to leave the old me behind. The point of this conversation with Silvio was to speak about the change I've made. At that time, I felt I changed my way of thinking, but as I hear it now, I noticed the pride in that voice. I felt so alive retelling my crime. Now I wonder if the change of mentality I claim is real. Sure, I haven't robbed anyone in a while, but if my attitude about it is the same, then what's really changed? Can I say I'm any different? Can I be sure I won't start stealing again tomorrow? I don't know. I remember having the same pride when I spoke to my friend Anthony about the first time I robbed someone, about how in 8th grade, my friends and I jumped a guy and stole his chain and jacket. I remember talking about the excitement I felt, excitement that I wanted to relive as I told Anthony my story. We ran like for like 2-3 blocks or something, and then turned the corner and ran some more, and then ran into a building. And my heart was beating super fast, and like my face was red, and I was like breathing heavy, but yeah, I had a lot of energy. And then there we all start like laughing for like what we did, and then we all like feeling all good, and like me personally, like it felt real good, like just robbing somebody and like taking their stuff, and it kind of put me in a position of power, and power feels good to anybody. So robbing somebody and just leaving there all vulnerable and taking the stuff felt real good. Like, I felt the rush. I felt the adrenaline. And, like, I kind of wanted more. Like, I was like, yo, there's no problem with this. I could do this. It feels good.
When you guys were actually found the guy, did it feel the same way then? Or did it feel, is there, like, an element of maybe something's going to go wrong?
I don't know about my other friends, but me, I was thinking, like, I hope nobody calls the cops on us. I hope nobody, like, somehow gets, like, our fingerprints. And, like, because, like, if we get caught by the cops, then my mom finds out. And my mom finds out, you know, that's, like, the worst thing that can happen to me. Because, like, I want my mom to know what I'm doing. You know, she's going to get all mad and disappointed and this and that. And for me, like, disappointment hurts more than any other type of emotion. So I just didn't want her to find out. That was my only fear.
I
I gave up Dylan stealing when I was a high school senior, but how long can I keep the animal caged? There are nights when I'm outside and I do feel like robbing someone, but I don't act on it. I spent 4 years lying and hiding my dirt from my family. Regaining their love and trust was a difficult task, and I don't want to risk losing it again. I wish my brain had a reset button so I can erase my past. Maybe a reminder of the old me will clear these uncertainties. The only person who can help me with this is Eugenia. She's been my close friend and support throughout my 4 years in high school. I'm gonna call her up and see what she has to say. What up, Eugenia? How you doing?
Hi, Louis. What's up?
Nothing. Chilling, chilling. Yo, I was just calling you up because you know me mad long for like 4 years and everything. So, because you know me that long, you basically have seen how I've changed throughout these years. So, I just want you to like describe to me how I was when you met me, like what you thought of me when you first saw me, like what kind of person you thought I was from then to now.
Yeah, I can do that. When we first met, I thought you were very mature because you and your hat there, the ghetto, you know, the baggy clothes, always the gray, the white, and the black. And then I started getting to know you a little bit more, you know, as the years went by. And I started realizing that you were hiding something. We started talking more and more and more, and I started telling you about my things. And we started talking as friends more than friends. You were like my brother to me.
Right, right.
And as we are now.
Yeah, right, sister.
And then, though, like early September, we were in Miss Chang's class. You sat right behind me. I remember going to the classroom, saying hi to everybody else. And then the late bell ringing and seeing your seat empty. And it wasn't just like one day at a week or something. It was basically like 3-4 days. And everybody was asking, where's Louis? Where's Louis? Where's Louis? And I would have to make some excuse. Oh, he's sick or his mom is doing something or whatever. Until I got to the point where there was no more excuses to give. And it was all because of the streets. You were out in the streets stealing and seeing my brother, my best friend, going downhill.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pleasant being there to see you let yourself go.
Right. No, I really feel you on that.
But then you started talking, oh, I'm not even going to go to college. I'm not going to fill up any application. And I got pissed. I really just didn't want to talk to you anymore because you were so strong throughout the years. And then now it's like you don't want anything. And even though you said you didn't care, the face you had when you received your report card, no, it's just horrible. Yeah. And you know me, I seriously did not want to talk to you at all. I didn't want to talk to the lazy bum.
Okay.
And having all the support there, hi.
All right, if you put it that way, damn. You're being mad harsh.
You know I still love you.
Talking to Eugenia made me realize I really messed up. As she described me, I felt sorry for myself because I was so ignorant at that time. But I also felt hate for the person she was describing because I knew I could have stopped long ago, but waited till the last year of high school to start changing. After a conversation, I flashed back to the moment I robbed my first victim and thought of the reasons I decided to do it. The only explanation that came to mind was that I was tired of being poor. My stepdad left my mom a few months before and she was stuck with all the bills. I was now the man of the house and I felt I had to be strong and bring in some sort of income at least for myself. I tried to get a job but no one wanted to hire a 13-year-old. I've matured since then and realized that much of my macho views came from my stepfather. He wasn't the best father figure but I did look up to him. He was kind to me when he entered my life. But as the years went by, he began calling me weak and overweight and would say I was exaggerating whenever my emotions would get hurt. To him, name calling was a game, but not to me. When he left, I did cry. Not because he was leaving, but because I couldn't hit him. Today, I wonder how else he's impacted my life and if his teachings helped lead me to the bad choices I've made. To answer this, I'm gonna need a professional's opinion. I know you're the person to speak to. There's a social worker by the name of Erica at the violence prevention program I go to. I hope her analysis can help. I just want you to, like, tell me from your perspective as a social worker, what are my issues with my past, and, like, I want to know how will it affect me later on and with my involvements with other people. So, I mean, you're free to say whatever you want.
Okay. Well, I think you're taking a big step in dealing with it simply by being involved in this program, because it's a violence prevention program. And with gender roles, we've done so much work on that, the man box. And from what I understand from your history, your stepfather was a very negative influence. And the original abandonment by your birth father, that has an impact. Because as early as infancy, you're learning from the people around you. And by not having a father there, where are you getting the sense of manhood? How are you supposed to learn what it is to be a real man when you're not surrounded by one? So you have this man come into your life who sometimes is nurturing and sometimes is, like, really super harsh on you, like, you better be strong and carry this and don't cry because only girls cry. When you're getting all of that, it's not only giving you a negative sense of what it is to be a man, but it's also putting down women. At what point do you start hurting other people? Whether it's mugging and robbing, threatening and scaring, that comes from a place inside of you where you don't feel good about yourself. You don't respect yourself. So you're willing to do the despicable. Because if you had any self-worth, you wouldn't do that to another person. But you don't have the self-worth because you have the messages embedded in you that you're a wimp, you're a whiner, you're a girly man, you're not a real man, you're not strong, and that you're too sensitive. Because didn't you get tagged with that label that you were too sensitive because you were so close to your mother?
Yeah, but, like, I never did the stealing thing because self-hatred. I respect myself to the fullest.
Then the tough question is, why did you do it?
Because, like, during the time I was stealing, I noticed, you know, my mom's having a problem with the bills. My mom's struggling, and I hate seeing it. I hate seeing my mother suffer. So what I figured was that, you know what? So many people out there are doing what's wrong and getting what they want. So why shouldn't I?
I can understand that because I've heard people who are drug dealers use the same rationale. But I mean, you got to think about it is you're hurting somebody else. And what gets you to the point where you have it in you to actually hurt somebody else? It's not easy, but you have to look at the feeling behind the feeling. Initially, you're robbing people because you need to get stuff and support your family. You don't want to see your mom working so hard. But where does the anger come in? Maybe you blame yourself for why her relationship with Jose didn't work, so that you cost your family some stability in that respect, and then your mom had to go back to the two-job thing. That comes from someplace inside of you, and it's not the easiest thing to recognize. It's deep in there, and it takes some work.
Like what you're telling me now, stuff that, like, I really don't think of. And I just want to, you know, thank you for listening to me. Thank you for having this conversation with me. I mean, it was really nice for you. And it's thank you. I mean,
anytime. You give me hope. And I need you to understand that that's coming from the heart.
All right. I mean, okay, cool. I'm not going to cry. All right, thanks. So far, I've talked about how I don't trust that I've actually changed my street mentality after giving up my life of crime. But now let me speak about what made me stop. At around November 2005, my life was far from cheerful. I was failing my classes and disappointing everyone around me. My friends tried to reach out to me, but I just wanted everyone to get off my case. I didn't like being home because the apartment was usually quiet because no one wanted to speak to me. When my mother tried to talk, it would always spark an argument and end with my mother locking herself in her room and me leaving the apartment until later at night. By December 2005, I'd managed to become distant from everyone I loved. I was losing sleep because I was selling drugs every night and yet waking up early every day to make it to class. Trying to be a high school student and keep my street credibility was an exhausting task. One night, I came home late and had an argument with my mother. I can still vividly remember what happened that night. I get home, my mom's like, "Lewis, what happened to you?" Like, she's all worried. I'm like, "Yo, calm down, mind your business." And then, like, she starts screaming at me, "This is my business, you are my business," and this and that. And I said, "Yo, shut up and mind your business." I really got loud with her. and I just go to my room, and then I'm there, like, he's sitting there, he's trying to calm down, because I usually take a long time to, you know, try to release, like, my anger and this and that. But then I was kind of like, I should go ahead and go say sorry to Mama. So I leave my room, I walk the hall, I go to her bedroom, but her door is, like, mostly closed, but just a little bit is open. Then I start hearing her on the phone, like, she's having a conversation. So I start being nosy and just listening, like, so she's talking to my grandmother, and she's crying. She's talking about me. She's talking about, like, oh, like, what did I do wrong? Why did Lewis turn out this way? Like, it's all my fault. And she's crying on the phone. Like, she could barely talk. Like, she's skipping words. She's not finishing words because she's crying. When I heard that, like, I felt like, I was trying to hold my tears. So, like, I can describe it as, like, my heart just getting flooded with like all the tears, and like I felt like my heart like it was being squeezed. I felt like my mouth was dry. I felt my mouth completely dry, and I was like how could I, you know, be like this? How could I make the woman that has, you know, raised me and all that, how can I make her cry like that? I felt like a monster. And then I just walked away, like, with my head down. I just walked away, and I went to my room, and I started crying even more. And, you know, just stayed in my room, and I said, you know what, I might as well just go to sleep. But I couldn't get the idea, like, the thought that I had the whole event out of my head. So I stayed up, like, the whole night, and I just decided that I need to change.
But change didn't come that easy for me. Depression hit me hard after I gave up crime. When I stopped selling drugs, I became a traitor to the people I dealt with. All the respect that neighborhood gave me was gone. I felt hurt because that respect was the only power I had. I wasn't doing good in school. I wasn't a good son. I wasn't making the amount of money I made before. And I didn't have anyone to talk to. I felt worthless. Dealing with depression was a struggle, but focusing my attention on my job and seeking help from social workers in my school helped me conquer it. It was a long process, but ultimately, I learned to express my emotions more freely and managed to strengthen the bonds between me and my family. It's now April 2007. Over a year has passed since I decided to change. Sometimes I find myself reminiscing on the times I was a bad boy or boasting to my friends about the negative life I lived. When I first started this project, I thought of those things as warning signs, signs that I haven't completely erased my past. But talking to these people, to Silvio, Eugenia, and Erica, and thinking about my life, I've realized that I can't make my past disappear. I try to make a distinction between my old self and my present self when in fact we're the same person. The past has made me who I am today.
Lewis produced this piece for 826 NYC, a nonprofit organization founded to strengthen students' writing skills and abilities to express ideas effectively, creatively, and confidently in their own voices. You can find out more on our blog at youthcast.org. Youthcast is the next generation of sound, a glimpse into the magic eight ball of radio's future, and the outlook is good. A project of Generation PRX, which is a website that's all about youth radio. Check it out, generation.prx.org. We'll be back in 2 weeks featuring more stories by talented young producers. I'm Chantel Harley. Thanks for listening.